As seems to be a recurring theme with all the lectures, I have to open up with the caveat, which is that there's far more material to discuss than there is time to discuss it. But we do have a half an hour, and I hope to try to give you a comprehensive overview with some very specific applications as well over an issue which for many years, perhaps you could say decades, certainly, has been a topic of hot discussion in communities, I know certainly in America, but I know it's not limited to the diaspora, of issues of medicines and makeup on Pesach. In particular, again, you forgive the examples, but it's my home community from America, but certainly in America over the last few decades, there have been an explosion of the various lists, and lists have become insufficient, so now we have books of lists of various makeups and medicines which are kosher lePesach. And the question is, and again, it's the lists I'm sure exist in Europe. I know they exist, the books and the lists exist in Israel as well. The question is, in general, what does the halacha say about medicines and makeup for Pesach? And then, so that you won't accuse me of avoiding controversial topics, in light of all that, what do I think of the books and the lists? So in order to be able to give you an honest and informed opinion about the lists and the books, so you have to start at the beginning and try to build piece by piece. The Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Samach Zayin and Samaches, speaking in general, not about chametz, but speaking in general about foods which are prohibited to eat, what we call ma'acholos asuros, tells us that the only foods which are asur, even if they are in a non-kosher substance, take the what you would say is the quote-unquote worst example, chazir, pig, or anything else that's not kosher, it's only prohibited, says the Gemara, if it is edible for human consumption. Roi l'achilas adam. But if something would be inedible, so then it doesn't have the status of a ma'achalos asuros, because in order to be a non-kosher food, it has to be food. And food is defined as what normal people would eat. So that's a baseline. Question is, how does that apply to chametz? Those of you who were with us on Yom Tov Rishon on the first day of Yontif yesterday, so we spoke before lunch all about the chumras. We spoke about chumra in general, but we started off by speaking about the fact that Pesach and chametz has lots of chumras. That's no question about it. So the question is, what is the status of chametz? Is it the same standard as other machalos asuros, that once it's inedible for a human, it becomes permitted? Or might it be more strict? And this is a discussion which emerges out of a contradiction between two other Gemaras, closer to home, you could say, in Maseches Psachim. On the one hand, the Gemara tells us on Daf Chaf Aleph that if you have chametz, which is burned on Erev Pesach, before the holiday, one is permitted to benefit. To benefit. We didn't say anything about eating yet. But you're allowed to benefit from that chametz on Pesach. It was already burnt before Pesach. Now, what benefit you'll get from those charred remains, I don't know, but you'll be creative. But you could get some benefit on Pesach, so says the Gemara. However, about 20-plus dapim later on Daf Memhei, there the Gemara speaks about not burnt chametz, but spoiled chametz. What if you have bread that is completely spoiled and moldy, and there the Gemara specifies it's inedible for human consumption, but it's ro'i l'achilas kelev. If you would put it in front of a dog, the dog would eat it. So says the Gemara, in that case, it is usur for a Jew to benefit from such chametz, because even though it's inedible, it serves a secondary purpose. Not for the dog. The dog is just a symptom. What does the Gemara say you could do with that chametz? It seems to be that you could use it to ferment, to be a kind of a sa'or, to make other things chametz. I'm not up on the enzymes and the chemistry of it, but Chazal were. They were very prescient in their knowledge of chametz and its chemical compound and abilities. And that's what the Gemara says. So many of the Rishonim say these two Gemaras seem to contradict each other. The first Gemara said if you burn the chametz, you could benefit from it. And presumably if you burn the chametz, it's really inedible. You've really destroyed it. You burnt it. And now the second Gemara says, no, even if it's inedible, as long as it's ro'i l'achilas kelev, it has edible for canine consumption, then it still has prohibited its isser bahana. So the classic example, explanation, excuse me, that is given by a number of Rishonim Tosfos there, the Rosh, in Perek Beis, Siman Aleph, is that there is no contradiction, and that really, even in the first Gemara, when we spoke about burning chametz, but the burning that it was referring to only made it inedible for human consumption. But in such a case, excuse me, it made it completely inedible even for an animal couldn't eat it, even a dog couldn't eat it. So that's why it was mutter to benefit from. But lu yitzuyer, theoretically, if you burnt chametz, and probably it wouldn't be deliberate, I don't know how a person would calculate this, but if it turned out that you burnt the chametz and it crossed over the line, it was inedible for a human, but it was still edible for the animal, then even the first Gemara would have agreed that it's prohibited in benefit. In other words, the second Gemara is really the controlling Gemara, and we just have to tweak our understanding of the first Gemara. That is to say that the definition of the prohibited status of chametz is different than other types of foods, chazir, other things throughout the year. Whereas they pass the threshold and are no longer prohibited, perhaps not desirable either, but they're not prohibited once they become inedible for human consumption. Chametz is more strict. This is yet another chumrah de chametz. Chametz, even if it's inedible for a human being, still can't be benefited until it is even more disgusting and it is inedible even for canine consumption for a dog. Given this fact, until now we've been speaking about benefit. The Gemara gave the example, if you burn the chametz, you can have hana'ah, you can enjoy it. Enjoy it meaning you could sell it, you could give it to others. And now we're saying you should know that we're only meaning if it was so burnt, it's inedible even for the dog. Question is, what about eating it? Now again, you'll say, well, who would eat such a thing? I don't know. Unless we're referring to medicines, which we'll have to get to. But maybe there could be other things. People will eat all sorts of things. Who knows? But again, even if it seems hypothetical now, it will become very practical when we discuss the issue of medicines in a few minutes. But the Gemara and the Rishonim specifically say, okay, until now you've now created a definition, so far so good. In order to become permissible, to have hana, to benefit from it, it has to be completely inedible even for the dog. What about to eat it? Is it the same standard? At that point, if someone, some mishugana somewhere, would eat it, would they be violation the prohibition of eating chametz on Pesach? That's a chiyuv kares. That's a good question. Or not? So some Rishonim, the Ritva, the Ran, others say explicitly, yes, it's the same thing. The Gemara just gave an example of hana, because that's more likely. There are all sorts of things you can do. You can sell it if you're entrepreneurial. There are other things you can do with this burnt chametz. You can get hana from that. The Gemara didn't discuss eating, because who would ever dream of eating it? But in Echanami, it's the same standard. Once it passes the threshold, it's any roi lechilas kelev, then you can't have hana from it either. It seems very reasonable. But here we come to the first breakthrough in the sugya, and is the opinion of the Rosh. Beinu Asher. Rabbeinu Asher was not only a great genius, and for his intellectual contributions alone, if you knew nothing of his biography, he'd be worthy of being in the Hall of Fame of rabbinic contributions. But he's particularly noteworthy because he's one of the rare Rishonim we have who, in the prime of his life, was able to bridge both Ashkenaz and Sfarad. He grew up in Ashkenaz, but he had to flee because of the Crusades. So then he settled, but still in the prime of his life, he ran for safety, and he made it to Spain. And he speaks a lot in that second part of his career about things he's finding in Sfarad, which are completely different than what he had seen in Ashkenaz. There's a number of different tshuvas. Just as a fascinating example, the community in his day in Sfarad was given so much autonomy by the king, they're even allowed to institute death penalties on Jewish criminals. There'd be a robber or somebody who was an incorrigible thief. So the Jewish community was killing people like that. Even if it wasn't Roy Tamisas Bezdin in the Chumash, in the Chosha Mishpat. And the Rosh comes to Spain and he sees this. He says, we don't do this in Ashkenaz. And it's a very celebrated tshuva where he discusses this. So that's just one example of many. But the Rosh is singularly important because of his bridge between Ashkenaz and Sfarad. Anyway, so the Rosh says, even though, again, it seems to make sense, once it's not even fit for a dog, so if someone were to eat it, whatever we would think about such a person, however desperate he would have to be, but okay, but presumably it should be mutter. That's all the other Rishonim said the Rosh, no, there's a difference. Because even though, yes, if I were to look at it in a theoretical way, I would say, this is inedible, of course. But if this person, for whatever idiosyncratic reason or his uniquely desperate situation, if he ate it, by his action of eating it, he has done what the Rush refers to from a Gemara, achshevei. What is achshevei? Achshevei means that even though we have a general default position that this is inedible, but if I eat it, I am giving chashivas to it. I am elevating its status. Not objectively, I don't think there's a market for this all of a sudden. But for me, you can't say for me it was mutter because it was inedible. It's by definition, it's a tautology. I ate it. So for me, achshevei, I gave it chashivas. This is not, you know, an ontological discussion about the nature of being of this moldy bread. Maybe for everyone else in the world it's inedible, but if you ate it, says the Rosh, achshevei. And therefore for you, now maybe the Taz says it's only Nisr Darabonon, he's not going to get kares, don't worry, but still, it's usr. Bottom line, can you eat an inedible object of chametz, says the Rosh, no. Aye, but it's inedible, but you ate it. So for you, it's obviously not inedible, you ate it. And in fact, this is how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch. So now we come to the first halacha lamaisa part of the shir. Does achshevei apply to medicine? Whatever chametz would be, in certain medicines that may be on the list that say chametz. So clearly they're inedible. What's in the medicine is not edible. If someone were to try to chew a typical pill that's made for swallowing, you would gag. It's not, and the chametz component in it is negligible and inedible, clearly. No one, that's not a debate. Even among the biggest machmirim, that's not a debate. Question is, so maybe in some theoretical sense it's inedible, but here it is.
Why is that different?
Well, that's going to be, thus is the question. Thus is the kasha. That's the question. Good. So the answer is, aside from our good friend now from Ali Adumim, Shoham, the mayors are from Malia Dumim. The answer is yes. One of the great, great achronim, the Shagas Aryeh, and in much more recent times, probably the first great posek in American history, although he wasn't American originally, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin, they both hold like you. The Shoham Tekarav, they hold. He's not known for his chumras, but okay. They hold lahachmir, and Echanami, it's no different. You're right, for most people this would be inedible, but for me this is very important. This is going to regulate my blood pressure, etc., whatever it's going to be, my heart, whatever it is. So for me it's achshevei, obviously. However, I could say they are a very, with all due respect, a very strong minority. The overwhelming majority of achronim, including such notable 20th century personalities as Rav Avadya Yosef, the Tzitzel Eliezer of Oldenburg, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and even the Chazon Ish, again, not someone known to be cavalierly makel by any stretch, all agree, bepeh achad, that medicines are not achshevei. Because you're not saying that for me this is food. You're saying, I'm desperate, I have a medical condition, and therefore I'm willing to take it, even if it wouldn't be food. If you put, if some, you told somebody, your health depends on the spoiled or moldy bread, again, they'd hope there's better options. But if you told them, no, you have to have this every single day, would they eat it? Does that mean that they give this, the chashivas a food? No. Trufot, medicine, is not the same thing as food. And therefore, most of these poskim say that it does not rise to the level. The way Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish formulate this are slightly different. Each one is a nuance, which is fascinating. Rav Moshe seems to say that there's no achshevei when the intent is to attain the medicinal value. You're not focusing on the taste or even the nutritional value. You're focusing on the medicinal value. And the Chazon Ish says something slightly different. He says, when we talk about achshevei, we're only referring to the active ingredients that a person wants to eat. But here, the part that's the chametz is not the active ingredient in almost any of the medicines we're talking about. Plus, you're swallowing it, not eating it. Now that, yeah. It's foreshadowing to the issue of chewable medicines, which I'll try to get to in a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, this what you just mentioned now is what I was focusing on. I don't understand how you can even look at medicine as possible. Edible, not edible, oxygen, not oxygen. Because the form that the pharmaceutical companies put it in, it's in a capsule, or even if it's in a hard... Well,
right.
I don't know what that's. I'm not a pharmacist. In a pill form, no, it isn't inedible because I mean it's not disgusting. It's not like moldy food or anything because you don't taste anything. You swallow it.
Well, again, that could, but that very fact could be the kula or the chumra.
It's not difficult.
That could be the kula or the chumra again. But
turn off, like
correct. So okay, so that's okay. So it's not just Shoham. It's also now Miami Beach.
Yeah.
Okay? Be careful. We're... I know, I'm just playing with you. I'm sorry. Although with my father, I would never play with. Again, so that's the point. Enechanami, he needs it. Whatever level of, we're not even discussing that, pikuach nefesh. Everyone wrote, pikuach nefesh is mutter. You could eat a big loaf of bread for pikuach nefesh. But the point is, if you're focusing on the medicinal value, again, according to those, the minority opinion, it doesn't matter. You ingested it, you ingested it. But those, the majority opinion says, the medicinal focus takes away the isser. Yeah.
According to emotion, just in general, is this like a certain level of severity, like how sick you are, like, or an Advil?
That's a fair point, but I think it'd be a separate point. But no, this point is a fundamental point.
And then, like, so according to Moshe, it says it's like taste you don't care about. Let's say you had two different. Oh, this one tastes worse. This one tastes better.
So I'm going to try to get to issues of medicines which have a more pleasant taste in a minute. Okay. All right. So that is the big question. Again, we didn't solve all the issues yet, but that is the real fundamental issue of this machlokes. Those again, those hashkacha agencies, those rabbanim who put out the lists, and others. They're either definitively deciding like the minority view, or again, to paraphrase yesterday's shir, they want to be choshesh to kol hashitos, and therefore they're machmir. But those who are more oriented towards the kula focus on this, what I would say is unquestionably a majority opinion. Now, again, a few of you were perceptive, and you picked up on the fact that depending on how we formulate this issue, you may get a nafgamina if it's more pleasant or less pleasant tasting, if it's chewable versus swallowing. So this is discussed in the poskim. And again, you forgive me for giving the examples that I'm most familiar with are from the U.S., but this seems to be machlokas between hashkacha agencies, at least in the U.S. Rav Gedalia Schwartz and the CRC, which is out of Chicago, but it's a nationally, internationally recognized hashkacha, they're of the opinion that it doesn't matter. Whether you're chewing it, whether it has a good taste or not, whatever you're going to trick your three-year-old in about the medicine, let's be honest, none of it tastes good, and you're not taking it for its taste. So there's not going to be an achshavei, because I'm not doing it for the taste. I'm still doing it for the medicinal value. It should be mutter. Other hashkacha agencies, and this does seem to be, I don't know if it's in writing, but some posts can quote Baal Peh, I have no reason to doubt them, Baal Peh, that Rav Moshe, who again is one of the Mekilim in general, but that he was machmir on things which are a little bit more pleasant tasting. They say Shlomo Zalman Orbach also felt those things which were a little bit more pleasant tasting. If you look in the Nishmas Avram, which is a book of medical halacha by Dr. Abraham, so he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Orbach that if the medicine would have a bitter taste, you could swallow it no problem, but if it has a more pleasant taste, he's talking about a pill, this is an example, he says you should wrap it in some kind of a tissue and swallow that, which might relate to your question, because who would want to do that unless they were really sick? How sick are you? Right? Is it just you don't want to do your homework, or you're really sick? You're going to take the medicine with the tissue also, or not? So in all seriousness, that might be the issue. So some hold, it doesn't matter. Once it's medicine, it's mutter, that's it. And others hold, no, maybe if it's a more pleasant taste, so you can chew it, it might be a little bit more of an issue. Yes, sir. So, I'm going to get to liquids when I discuss issues of alcohol and things like that. But leave aside, even before I get to that, again, the issue with liquid, is, as far as I'm concerned, leave aside the issue of the alcohol in a minute, is not so much liquid per se, because you're still swallowing that, is that typically those have perhaps a more pleasant taste. Again, especially the ones they give an added taste. I don't think there's something inherently more makel or more machmir about the liquid or the solid, especially if in the case where you're swallowing them both.
I thought it was like the custom, maybe I'm wrong, but the custom nation, swallowing is not
dairy. I'm saying, so you swallow pills and you swallow. Oh, you say, oh, because a liquid is always swallowed.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, listen, there are hashkacha agencies in general that are a little bit more machmir on liquids, although, again, it overlaps with an issue which we haven't gotten to yet, because sometimes there are other ingredients there. But again, I think the bigger issue, as far as I'm aware, is also has to do with the taste. Again, when it's I have to move on a little bit. But it's the more pleasant the taste, which again, often, not always, again, it's all relative, despite what we tell our kids. The medicine, none of them taste good, and certainly no one takes them for their taste. So that's as I say, a general issue. And again, you have, again, both in Israel and in the States, and I assume in Europe or others as well, Rabbanim, who, again, are a little bit more permissive and a little bit more hesitant. Again, and these are some of the factors. Again, the big issue they're discussing is the fundamental question of achshavei, does it apply to anything medicinal? And then once you cross that major threshold, then you have some of the more subtle issues which have to do with the taste or chewable and things like that. Again, if you really hold it fundamentally there's a problem, then you might be machmer on all of them. And if you hold there's fundamentally no problem, you might be makel on all of them. That's really the first and big issue that I want to mention. One other issue before we get to the perfumes and other types of things is toothpaste. Toothpaste, on the one hand, is not a food by any stretch of anyone's definition. On the other hand, you do put toothpaste in your mouth, but you don't swallow it, typically. So this is a general discussion in Yoredei and Simon Sadi Ches between the Taz and the Piskei Tshuva. Can you take anything, a treif, not pechames, all year round, take something treif, put it in your mouth, and then spit it out? And the Taz has a certain leniency, but Piskei Tshuva and others are more machmir. Nevertheless, even those machmirim, many poskim hold, would be lenient if what we're talking about is inedible. In other words, if you take a delicious piece of lobster and you put it in your mouth and spit it out, so that was the machlokas, they say. But if you take something that was anyway inedible and you don't even swallow it, you spit it out, so they say not only would the Taz be makel, but everyone would be makel. After all, what's the issue of swallowing, especially if it's inedible? That's if it's achshavei, but if you didn't even swallow it, you just had it in your mouth, maybe that wouldn't even rise to that. Among those who were very makel on this, when it comes to chametz and toothpaste, they say in the name of Rav Moshe Rav Soloveitchik, there's a story that they tell over, maybe it's in one of Rabbi Ziegler's books, about Rav Soloveitchik held that you could use any toothpaste you wanted on Pesach, it didn't matter, because toothpaste, by definition, is ein roi l'achilas kelev. So one of the smart Alex and Shear came in the next day, he said, I took toothpaste and I put it in front of my dog and my dog ate it. So Rav Soloveitchik apparently said to him, well, your dog is a meshugana. And we don't bring the araya from a meshugana. Nevertheless, others, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, held that even though fundamentally there's room to be makil, but nevertheless, he was worried, because again, it is something you put in your mouth that's different than other things. And number two is, and this is for sure true, even more so now than in his day, the accessibility of kosher Pesach toothpaste is so easy, it's a good place to be machmir. I saw just recently, a year or two ago, that they say over from Rav Amital Zatzal, from the Gush, that he recalled, someone told him, one of the American Ramim told him this story, maybe it was Rav Lichtenstein even, they told him the story about Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Amital came down on the side of Rav Moshe, not Rav Soloveitchik. Why? He said he remembers that in the Russian labor camps, which he knew from his younger days, in World War II, people would put toothpaste on their bread and eat it. So they were made to live like dogs, but once they were, nebuch, because of the persecution, but people did eat toothpaste. Again, it takes an extreme situation, but maybe if it's royal achila in such desperate situations, maybe that counts, whether you're meshugan a dog, a desperate person. So again, for the most part, I think the minogagis in my circles, what I'm familiar with, is that people are, even if they're generally makel on the medicines, but people do try to be machmir for the toothpaste, either because they think genuinely there's more of an issue, or just because it's so easy, so to speak, why not? Let's, turn the page and use the final 10 minutes to discuss issues relating to fermented alcohols and the like, and how that relates to things such as perfumes, and then I'll give you my final take on the issue of the lists. Many cosmetics or other types of things that we either use or ingest, but even things that we just put on our bodies, contain a type of alcohol which is known as ethyl alcohol. Ethyl alcohol is a fermentation of a starch, of a sugar, of carbohydrates. Many of them are kidneys, and some of them are even based on actual chametz grains. Now, the issue which becomes particularly relevant for us is that many governments, certainly the Western world for sure, in order to distinguish between alcohol, which is intended for human consumption, and other types of alcohols, and the reason they make that distinction is a financial one, because there's huge taxes as well as regulations on the alcohol that people drink, the scotches and the whiskeys and the beers, etc. They don't have those type of taxes, let alone the regulations on the perfumes or other deodorant and the like. So what do they do? I don't know the date of when this actually, someone figured this out, but they decide this is what the issue is called denatured alcohol. They're pogame. They take some kind of a chemical situation and they make the alcohol disgusting, and then once it's that, so then it's already out of the I'm not a drinker. All scotch is disgusting to me. I know for some people that was blasphemy. You forgive me, but what could I do? But nevertheless, there's a big difference. No matter how much you don't like scotch, there's a difference between the scotch when it's made to be drank, you know, the alcohol when it's made to be consumed, and then when they denature it, when they add these things to make it unfit for consumption, sometimes even poisonous. Now the issue is, the wild card is, and this has been confirmed by many chemists, is that denaturing process can be reversed. And a friend of mine who's a rabbi in Woodmere told me he was talking to a chemist in his shul, and he asked her how long would it take to, if someone who knew what they were doing, to reverse the denaturing and make something that, like a deodorant or something, again, a desperate person, but how long if they knew what they were doing to reverse it? And she said a matter of minutes. So as much as it's become inedible by the denaturing process, it's not irreversible. And that is a factor for some poskim. Now, when it comes to the perfumes and makeup and the like, you might be thinking, what could be the issue? Who's eating it? Who's eating it? So this is because we have an issue. The reason why we have to even discuss it is called Sicha Kishtia. The Gemara talks about this in the context of Yom Kippur, most famously, in other places, which is something that is smeared or put on the body, and you benefit from that, either because it feels good or it looks good, but you get a benefit from that. That is a type of consumption equivalent to food, which is enjoyed when actually ingested or consumed. And even though some Rishonim limit that to Yom Kippur, the consensus is that fundamentally that could be a prohibition that is throughout the year. This became a major cause celebrate in the halachic world not that long ago, probably about 100 years ago or so, with the popularity of soaps made from trefa fats. Does the soap have to be kosher? Again, it sounds, you know, crazy, but it's not crazy. If you hold that sicha kishtia, getting hana from something that you rub on your body, is a form of benefit, and that is on some level, again, it's a legalism, but we take those legalisms seriously. That's a form of shtia, of consumption, so maybe it's an issue. And there were poskim who were machmir in Europe, and for sure they needed to have what's called, quote-unquote, kosher soap. And they suggest, some of them said, because it's not even so disgusting, you really, in theory, again, I don't know what the soaps, obviously I wasn't around, but apparently they weren't so disgusting. Other poskim held, no, really it should be okay. And what's interesting, and this is a segue to our final point, two of the great poskim, one Ashkenazic and one Sephardic, the Aruch HaShulchan from the Ashkenazim and the Kaf HaChaim from the Sephardim, they both came to the same kula. And they said, if you look at the earlier sources that speak about not using this quote-unquote treif soap, the soap, again, I don't know exactly, it's hard for me to imagine what they're referring to, but they both say the same thing, that type of soap was actually on some level edible. However, they said already in their day, the soaps are totally inedible. No one could eat the soap. And therefore, they held that there's no problem, because that's even more lenient. Whatever status you want to use for them, you're going to consume. Edible for a human, edible for a dog, a mashugana dog, a normal dog. But if it's only a sicha, so then they said, once you tell me that it's an inedible soap, which again, already in the Aruch HaShulchan's time, he's saying this, in Ashkenaz, and the Kaf HaChaim, in Sfarad, in the Sephardi communities, they both say this. In many modern poskim, including Rav Avadya Yosef and others, accept that distinction, and the overwhelming minhag nowadays is to be maker. Again, I can't vouch for every community, but sort of the communities in which I live in and have been a part of, I don't know anyone who was looking for kosher soap. Not Don Pesach and not all year round. Even though there may be really trefa ingredients in the soap, it doesn't matter because the general minhag is to be makel. Nevertheless, when it comes to chametz, so some people want to be machmir. And the last issue, and this for those of you from the Farakway Five Towns area, if you remember the name Rabbi Blumenkrantz, Zechara Levracha, who was the most machmir probably of anyone ever on these issues, the reason was because he said as follows. He held that anything that becomes inedible, again, it's based on a Chavos Das. The Chavos Das is from the Nesivos, not an insignificant opinion. He said that is only if it became nifsal. It actually rotted or became spoiled on its own. And therefore, it became inherently inedible. But if you have something which theoretically should be edible, but you then put some chemicals into it to make it inedible, which is what happens in the denaturing process, then it doesn't matter how disgusting it is, it shouldn't make a difference. He thinks it's always usher. It started off usher. In fact, you added things to make it disgusting, won't change it. It's only if it on its own, it degraded, it became inedible, that you have the leniencies. That is a minority view in the early Achronim, and it's a minority view among 20th century poskim. But if you want to know why he was so machmir, that's the reason. It was based on this opinion. He felt that all makeups, you're smearing them on your body, you're putting them on you, the creams and other things. So that's a type of hana, which usually is disallowed. And even though it's disgusting, they have all sorts of properties in it. Says, but that's not, the chametz properties themselves would be edible, but they put other things in. So he thought that made a difference, based on this one opinion. Others, again, a majority of you, I would say, disagree. Things that go around the mouth, they're in the mouth. Again, there are always those poskim who are going to be machmir, but many, including Rav Soloveitchik, as far as I'm aware, Avad Yosef, I saw just this past week, and others, felt that once it was denatured, it should be mutter. It should be mutter. One notable exception was Rav Moshe Feinstein. In Rabbi Eider's Zichrono Levracha's book, he quotes that Rav Moshe held you should get kosher Pesach deodorant. Why? Because he says, Rav Moshe says, I know of an alcoholic who was so desperate, and when he was in his rehab facility, they had deodorant, and he drank the alcohol in the deodorant. Now, it sounds desperate, but someone who's an alcoholic who doesn't have any alcohol can't be desperate. Should that be the litmus test for everyone everywhere? Rav Moshe Feinstein felt yes. Other people are makil. Again, so that's one thing where you do have some chumrah. Rav Moshe, who's generally makil, was machmir on that. I'll just end with one last word about the lists themselves. There's really an interesting debate, and I would say elu v'elu. I'm not here to, I mean, unless you ask me privately, but from the pulpit, I'm not giving my personal opinion. But really, I could see both sides. I really mean that. The Star K, the Rabbanim from Los Angeles, Rabbi Best, who's a prominent proponent of these lists, Rabbi Blumenkrantz, others, even people in Eretz Yisrael, they go with the assumption that not only on the books are there lots of chumras in Pesach, and also shailas about these things, and I try to give you a heads up about a little of them. They say the minhag, quote unquote, the Mesorah in Klal Yisrael was to be machmir. And you and I can attest to that because we know many of the people sitting here perhaps, and certainly many of our friends and neighbors are very machmir, always looking for the makeups and the perfumes and the medicines. So therefore, they put the list out. But even they, if you look at the Star K literature, will tell you, and I'm from Baltimore, I was very friendly with Rabbi Heinemann, Me'ikar Adin, he holds his mutter. He holds like the majority view. But the minhag is we should try to be machmir, so I give you the lists. Others, notably in the OU, Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz from the CRC, and Rav Stern, who's a big, big posik from Bnei Brak, one of the leaders of the Chasam Sofer Hashkacha here in Eretz Yisrael, one of the most respected Hashkachas. So they take the exact opposite perspective. I have a quote, if you want, from Shmuel Eliezer Stern, one of the most prominent Haredi Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, who thinks that the lists are killing people. Because what they've created a situation is that the default is that people are so worried and they won't take the medicine. A few years ago, the OK, which is a Chabad-based Hashkacha in America, they quoted from Rabakshi Daron, the great Rishon Lezion. Others have said similar stories where they know people who literally, I'm not exaggerating, literally died on Pesach because they didn't take a medicine which they couldn't find an OK for it in the list, even though they needed it. I heard the same thing with my own ears from a Gedalia Dov Schwartz from Chicago, that he's so worried about the fact that people are going to have this orientation of Chumrah when they shouldn't be, that they're against the list, and they look at it from the opposite perspective. There are times there should be machmir. So if you're not sure about something, so you'll go ask the rabbi. Maybe the rabbi will tell you to be machmir. But they start off with the assumption that it's mutter, unless you have good reason to think otherwise it should be machmir. Those organizations, again, well-meaning and sincere, who give out the lists and everything, they start from the like opposite perspective, that there's a minog, a mesorah, to be machmir, so we'll give you the list so you can find the coolest. Again, theoretically, you could find permissible almost anything nowadays. If you look, those who are against the list hold, though, but once you put the lists out, you create a context where people presume prohibition, and unfortunately, Rahman al-Aslan, there have been cases where mistakes and tragic situations have happened. So this is the issue, whatever your orientation or your personal minhag is, L'shem Shemaim is good, but now you understand, I hope, at least the basics of both sides of the issue.